Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. One of our Friday morning get-togethers that I always look forward to.
And of course, it's St. Patty's Day as we speak.
And indeed.
St. Patrick was an escaped slave, I believe.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating history.
Oh.
And a friend gave me a book of 366 things to love about being Irish. And for the calendar, Tuesday, it says the 17th, the four-leaf clover. If you find one, it'll give you great powers, good luck at the horse track, protect you from evil spirits. Remember, though, you have to keep it secret and on your body or it doesn't work anymore.
Okay, now listen, I think when we're finished, no, it's too early for clovers to be coming up, but I'll certainly be watching in the garden below here.
The snowdrops and the crocuses are out.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, where I am, there's a couple of those small little daffodils up.
Yes. We get a nice early growing season. Of course, in Victoria, they've probably already had all their flowers for spring.
They're a week or so. But, you know, I looked down this morning on the ground, and there was frost here.
Those are tough little flowers.
Yep.
Yeah. Our first question today comes from Lauren. Hello, Bob. I'm an avid listener to your weekly program. Last summer sometime, I mentioned in a note to you about entering a period of cash is king, which you agreed. I had taken a large part of one of my portfolios and cashed in, losing in some instances on the cash. This is now very recognized publicly, but my next point phase is I was only half right in getting into cash. Now, when do you start buying back? I know there are thousands of scenarios. I'm thinking more of just timing. Thank you so much for your comments. Best, Lauren.
Yeah, Lauren, you did the right thing. And to go to fully cash in then a year ago, a strong market, takes a lot of discipline. And especially when you're besieged by bullish stories all over the place. So, look at it. You did the right thing. However, it is nowhere near time to be looking to get back in. And even for traders, it's difficult to do counter trades on an oversold in a bear market. So we would just say stay on the sidelines. And since the first of the year, we've been saying, since the top of the market in January, a year and a half ago, it was to raise liquidity, sell the rallies, and that is still the objective. And the liquidity will become so precious, you won't believe it. But anyways, no, you did the right thing, and just don't get back into the game and use whatever strength that comes in over the next month or so to raise more cash, because this fall could be a disaster. It's the seasonal time for when disasters are discovered. And thanks for the question.
Question from Henrik B. in Europe. Henrik, that was the first name of my father-in-law. Henrik Ulrich Knuffmucker, before he changed his name to Henry Kent.
Okay.
Henrik asks, Bob has previously called for a U.S. dollar top at 120. Is that call still valid? And what might be a guesstimate on timing for the top?
Yeah, that 120 was just pulled out of the air. You know, there was not much you could do on projecting lines. And 104, I guess lately, it did under the panic conditions in early October, got to 114.75, which was very overbought. So then as the panic eased in the financial markets, the U.S. dollar headed down. That's appropriate. So the hit to the dollar in January was severe. I guess one, the last impulse for speculation in financial markets, the realization of just how disastrous the Biden administration is, and then also you can have a very good seasonal low for the U.S. dollar in January. So we had it all oversold, timing, everything else. So it seems to be building a trading range since, and we like the one where it has an oversold and then builds about a 5 base and then breaks out on the upside. So perhaps we're in that base building pattern for a month or so. But the feature of any post-bubble contraction has been the senior currency becoming chronically strong. So, and this has been the case since the bubble completed.
Our third question comes from Andrew. After large deposit outflows at Credit Suisse recently, the Swiss National Bank said it will provide Credit Suisse with liquidity if necessary. To me, the only liquidity the Swiss National Bank could provide would have to be called credit fondue. But why would that be necessary? Who in Switzerland would go to that banquet should the bank melt down? Bob, can the magicians at the central bank really defy physics and avert this crisis from spilling through the provision of liquidity? And my question is, Bob, is the Swiss banking system like their cheese, full of holes?
My gosh, Andrew, that's a good one. Yeah, you have a way with words. I like it. These great bubbles are always followed by severe liquidity and banking crises. You have the year that the bubble completes, and that completed in January a year ago. Other times, like in the U.S., the 1929 bubble completed in September, 1873 bubble completed also in September. But then in the year following, you begin to have some banking failures. And in 1930, in the U.S., the banking failures appeared in the southeast, Tennessee, I think it was the Caldwell Banking Group. That began to appear in September, and then it just kept rolling. And you had one also, I had to refresh my memory on this one. In Europe, the Rothschilds out of Austria, they had a bank called Credit Anstalt. Mm. And in the 1930 pressures, the authorities encouraged Credit Anstalt to bail out some other private banks. And then the big hit in, I guess it was May or June of 1931, it was May 1931, is when then the bailout bank, Credit Anstalt, had too many obligations and not enough reserves, and it failed. And then that really put the pressures on the global panic that ran until July 1932, when that initial convulsion finally cleared. And also, I'm going to put this in because the street here is still convinced that inflation is going to continue because the Federal Reserve is going to continue to inject credit into the markets. But in July 1932, Barron's, the highly respected financial publication had an editorial on the contraction, and the gist of the editorial was that every anti-deflationary measure taken by the Federal Reserve is seen not to be working. And the anti-deflationary measures taken by the Fed was buying bonds out of the market. So the Fed was injecting liquidity all the way down, and it didn't work. So the Fed is injecting liquidity. They talk about tightening, but forget about it. The Fed will never really deliberately tighten. It had to raise interest rates because treasury bill rate always goes up in a bubble. So, and then now with the crack in the markets and the yield curve reversing, you've got short rates are heading down now. So the T-bill rate is going to go probably down to close to zero, and the Fed will have to follow with its administered rate all the way down. So, bubbles are bubbles and contractions are contractions. And now, and I like the line about the credit fondue, but even in Switzerland, there's not much you can do. But it's worth noting that the Swiss National Bank trades publicly, and you can get a chart on it. Look it up. So I think after our show here, I'm going to take a look at it myself.
Well, Credit Suisse shares have soared after they got the central bank lifeline. So
it's been bouncing up and down, Jim.
Yeah, and I know people as well, weren't Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank kind of lumped in together as poorly managed banks?
Oh, I'm not sure. I haven't seen anything on Deutsche.
Well, for a while.
No, but it's probably all of a mess anyways, because the theory of central banking is that it's there to be a lender of last resort, and it fixes a bad bank, then there's no crisis, and then there's no recession. But the problem is that it's not one bank that goes bad. They all go bad at the same time. So the concept of the lender of last resort has been overwhelmed on every bust. So, and this will be shown again.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your eye, they all seem to be connected to the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank in New York. SVP collapse threatens funding source for climate startups.
Yes. They were pouring money into all kinds of climate stuff. They even put money into some very activist political unit. I don't know. It wasn't Antifa, but it was maybe Black Lives Matter or something like that. So it was funding political ambitions and a very strange mix of things. But thankfully, the market has pulled the pin on that one. But there was also another one here, Jim, where it hits ordinary people. The one here, Hollywood payroll firm hit by SVB collapse, causing delays in payments. Now, the payments were salary checks for all the guys who are working, people are working in not just movie production, but also TV production. So, ordinary people, and of course, I think this will, they'll work things out because it was a payment system, and they can get that sorted out. So, we live in interesting times.
Breitbart's headline about SVB was green, woke, and broke.
Isn't it true? Oh, yeah, it was so true. But, it reminded me of in the 1772 bubble in England, you had your merchant banks were, Barings and stuff like that, quite seasoned banks, but you also had your outlying banks, and one was in Scotland, or Northern England, close to Scotland, Ayr Bank, A-Y-R. And it was funded by a group of wealthy men, largely in Northern England and Scotland. And they were going to show the old stodgy bankers what new banking was all about.
Uh-huh.
And they were funding this and funding that, and then, whoop, all of a sudden, market forces changed, and that bank failed, along with others, on that post-bubble contraction. And actually, there's a cartoon, ink-drawn cartoon, from one of the crashes back then, and the images of a guy in an open carriage galloping along the road with a team of horses, and the left front wheel of the carriage is gone and broke, but he's got the treasure chest with all the gold and silver in it in the right-hand rear corner of the carriage, and he's sitting in that corner in order to keep the left front of the carriage in the air, and it was caught, the caption was, balancing the cash. So there are cartoons going way back on financial disasters.
Headline, U.S. banking system can weather SVB contagion risk, from Bloomberg.
Yeah, that's one of those. That one was the first one that came out. That was March 10th, Morgan Stanley. And the first thing is, for one of these big firms, a spokesman who has learned economic theories, they come out with the economic theory that, oh, there's no problem, it can be fixed. And then they find out over time that it can't be fixed. So, this is where this thing, the initial hit has brought forward all kinds of these kind of headlines. I just took some of the more dramatic ones. So,
headline from Market Watch: regional banks are seeing flight of deposits to too big to fail mega banks.
Yeah, and unless those too big to bank fails, banks are careful, they could get hit too. Now, the Canadian banking system is interesting because it started around 1818 with the Bank of Montreal in Montreal, which was the financial and trade center then. And the rules in Canada, I guess administered by England, were that any bank startup, the directors had to put their own money in, and they were liable for I think twice that amount. So then the directors and bankers put their own money in, and they looked after it. So you developed a very sound banking system in Canada, such that going back to 1929, you had the four large banks, regional, right across the country, and there were no bank failures. Now, probably, whether it was Bank of Montreal or Royal Bank or whatever, they would probably shut down some branches. But in the United States, they did not have that. They were all individual banks, and they couldn't have banking across out of the state and that kind of thing. So you had bank failures in the states running 2,000 or 3,000, say, in 1930 or 31 or something like that. It was thousands of banks failed in the states.
And from the Financial Times, a headline from Ken Griffin, U.S. capitalism is breaking down before our eyes. Is it, Bob?
No. I would say that the crazy socialist intrusion through central banking, trying to get more out of the economy than it can deliver, is going to get cleaned out. The degree of the mania has been extraordinary. And it was the urge to speculate was exaggerated by highly radical central banking, which is not acting for the people, but it's acting for the state, so that the Federal Reserve, for example, has been corrupted from an imaginary agency there to, let's say, use quote marks, to manage the economy. And of late, it its sole function has been to fund, to provide unlimited funding for yet another unlimited experiment in authoritarian government. So this is coming to an end. The Fed's quite broke, really, because, like with other central banks, they bought the hell out of the bond market. And then you had one of the greatest crashes in history in bonds, and they have really been stiffed. So I don't see any huge help or from any government agency or any independent huge bank from bailing this thing out. It is going to be a methodical contraction.
And both Canada and the U.S. have legislation that calls for bank bail-ins. In other words, the government doesn't help them out if they're in trouble, but the depositors get the so-called Cyprus haircut.
Yeah, they'll mess. What it's going to be bad, and all the efforts to stave it off will maybe make it worse. So, yep, yeah.
But capitalism, as we know it, not over.
Oh no! As a matter of fact, I think the contraction will be part of a reform against the huge and intrusive government. You know, there'll be no money to fund these imaginary fears, like, well, COVID. The fear of that one is over. But they sure sucked in a lot of money on that game. And then, of course, you got now the fear of climate. Well, hey, that's soon going to be by the wayside as well. So I think the largest experiment in authoritarian government in history has done its damage and is coming to an end. And so you had radical financial speculation combined with radical political speculation, and both will be failing. So for those of us who would like to see less government and less fear, it's going to be an interesting time.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you, and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.